Salvat.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اللهم إني أسألك برحمتك التي وسعت كل شيء وبقوتك التي قهرت بها كل شيء وخضع لها كل شيء وذل لها كل شيء وبجبروتك التي غلبت بها كل شيء وبعزتك التي لا يقوم لها شيء وبعظمتك التي ملأت كل شيء وبسلطانك الذي على كل شيء وبوجهك الباقي بعد فناء كل شيء لشيء وبأسمائك التي ملأت أركان كل شيء وبعلمك الذي أحاط بكل شيء وبنور وجهك الذي أضاء له كل شيء يا نور يا قدوس يا أول الأولين ويا آخر الآخرين اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تحت كل عصام اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تنزل النقم اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تغير النعم اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تحبس الدعاء اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تنزل البلاء اللهم اغفر لي كل ذنب أذنبته وكل خطيئة أخطأتها اللهم إني أتقرب إليك بذكرك وأستشفع بك إلى نفسك وأسألك بجودك أن تدنيني من قربك وأن توزعني شكرك وأن تلهمني ذكرك اللهم إني أسألك سؤال خاضع متذلل خاشع أن تسامحني وترحمني وتجعلني بقسمك راضيا قانعا وفي جميع الأحوال متواضعا اللهم وأسألك سؤال من اشتد انفاقته وأنزل بك عند الشدائد حاجته وعظم فيما عندك رغبته اللهم عظم سلطانك وأعلى مكانك وخفي مكرك وظهر أمرك وغلب قهرك وجرت قدرتك ولا يمكن الفرار من حكومتك اللهم لا أجد لذنوبي غافرا ولا لقبائحي ساترا ولا لشيء من عملي القبيح بالحسن مبدلا غيرك لا إله إلا أنت سبحانك وبحمدك ظلمت نفسي وتجرأت بجهلي وسكنت إلى قديم ذكرك لي ومنك علي اللهم مولاي كم من قبيح سترته وكم من فادح من البلاء أقلته وكم من عثار وقيت وكم من مكروه دفعته وكم من ثناء الجميل لست أهلا له نشرته اللهم عظم بلائي وأفرط بي سوء حالي وقصرت بي أعمالي وقعدت بي أغلالي وحبسني عن نفعي بعد أملي وخدعتني الدنيا بغرورها ونا نفسي بجنايتها ومطالي. يا سيدي فأسألك بعزتك ألا يحجب عنك دعائي سوء عملي وفعالي، ولا تفضحني بخفي ما اطلعت عليه من سري، ولا تعاجلني بالعقوبة على ما عملته في خلواتي من سوء فعلي وإساءتي ودوام تفريطي وجهالتي وكثرة شهواتي وغفلتي. وكن اللهم بعزتك لي في كل الأحوال رؤوفا، وعلي في جميع الأمور عطوفا. إلهي وربي من لي غيرك، أسأله كشف ضري والنظر في أمري. إلهي ومولاي أجريت علي حكما اتبعت فيه هوى نفسي، ولم أحترس فيه من تزيين عدوي، فغرني بما أهوى وأسعده على ذلك القضاء. فتجاوزت بما جرى علي من ذلك بعد حدودك، وخالفت بعد أوامرك، فلك الحمد علي في جميع ذلك، ولا حجة لي فيما جرى علي فيه قضاءك. وألزمني حكمك وبلاؤك، وقد أتيتك يا إلهي بعد تقصيري وإصرافي على نفسي، معتذرا نادما منكسرا مستقيلا مستغفرا منيبا مقرا مذعنا معترفا، لاجد مفرا مما كان مني، ولا مفزعا أتوجه إليه في أمري غير قبولك عذري وإدخالك إياي في سعة رحمتك. اللهم فاقبل عذري، وارحم شدة ضري، وفكني من شد وثاقي. يا رب ارحم ضعف بدني ورقة جلدي ودقة عظمي. يا من بدأ خلقي وذكري وتربيتي وبري وتغذيتي، هبني لابتداء كرمك وسالف برك بي يا إلهي وسيدي وربي. أتراك معذبي بنارك بعد توحيدك، وبعد من طوى علي في قلبي من معرفتك، ولهج به لساني من ذكرك، واعتقده ضميري من حبك، وبعد صدق اعترافي ودعائي خاضعا لربوبيتك. هيهات أنت أكرم من أن تضيع من ربيته، أو تباعد من أدنيته، أو تشرد من آويته، أو تسلم إلى البلاء من كفيته ورحمته. وليت شعري يا سيدي وإلهي ومولاي أتسلط النار على وجوه خرت لعظمتك ساجدا، وعلى ألسن نطقت بتوحيدك صادقة وبشكرك مادحة، وعلى قلوب اعترفت بإلهيتك محققة، وعلى ضمائر حوت من العلم بك حتى سارت خاشعة. وعلى جوارح سعت إلى أوطان تعبدك طائعة، وأشارت باستغفارك مذعنة، ما هكذا الظن بك، ولا أخبرنا بفضلك عنك يا كريم. يا ربي وأنت تعلم ضعفي، عن قليل من بلاء الدنيا وعقوباتها وما يجري فيها من المكاره على أهلها، على أن ذلك بلاء ومكروه، قليل مكثوه، يسير بقاء قصير مدته، فكيف احتمالي لبلاء الآخرة وجليل وقوع المكاره فيها، وهو بلاء تطول مدته ويدوم مقامه ولا يخفف عن أهله، لأنه لا يكون إلا عن غضبك وانتقامك وسخطك، وهذا ما لا تقوم له السماوات والأرض. يا سيدي فكيف لي وأنا عبدك الضعيف الذليل الحقير المسكين المستكين؟ يا إلهي وربي وسيدي ومولاي، لأي الأمور إليك أشكو، ولما منها أضج وأبكي؟ لأليم العذاب وشدته، أم لطول البلاء ومدته؟ فلئن صيرتني للعقوبات مع أعدائك، وجمعت بيني وبين أهل بلائك، وفرقت بيني وبين أحبائك وأوليائك، فهبني يا إلهي وسيدي ومولاي وربي، صبرت على عذابك، فكيف أصبر على فراقك؟ وهبني يا إلهي صبرت على حر نارك، فكيف أصبر عن النظر إلى كرامتك؟ أم كيف أسكن في النار ورجائي عفوك؟ فبعزتك يا سيدي ومولاي أقسم صادقا، لئن تركتني ناطقا لأضجن إليك بين أهلها ضجيج الآملين، ولأصرخن إليك صراخ المستصرخين، ولأبكين عليك بكاء الفاقدين، ولأنادي أنك أين كنت يا ولي المؤمنين؟ يا غاية آمال العارفين، يا غياث المستغيثين، يا حبيب قلوب الصادقين، ويا إله العالمين. أفتراك سبحانك يا إلهي وبحمدك تسمع فيها صوت عبد مسلم سجن فيها بمخالفته، وذاق طعم عذابها بمعصيته، وحبس بين أطباقها بجرمه وجريرته، وهو يضج إليك ضجيجا مؤملا لرحمتك، ويناديك بلسان أهل توحيدك، ويتوصل إليك بربوبيتك. يا مولاي فكيف يبقى في العذاب وهو يرجو ما سلف من حلمك؟ أم كيف تؤلمه النار وهو يأمل فضلك ورحمتك؟ أم كيف يحرقه لهيبها وأنت تسمع صوته وترى مكانه؟ أم كيف يشتمل عليه زفيرها وأنت تعلم ضعفه؟ أم كيف يتقلقل بين أطباقها وأنت تعلم صدقه؟ أم كيف تسجره زبانيتها وهو يناديك يا ربه؟ أم كيف يرجو فضلك في عتقه منها فتتركها فيها؟ هيهات، ما ذلك الظن بك، ولا المعروف من فضلك، ولا مشبه لما عملت به الموحدين من برك وإحسانك. فباليقين أقطع لولا ما حكمت به من تعذيب جاحديك، وقضيت به من إخلاد معانديك، لجعلت النار كلها بردا وسلاما، وما كان لأحد فيها مقرا ولا مقاما. لكنك تقدست أسماؤك، أقسمت أن تملأها من الكافرين من الجنة والناس أجمعين، وأن تخلد فيها المعاندين، وأن تجل ثناؤك. قلت مبتدئا وتطولت بالإنعام متكرما، أفمن كان مؤمنا كمن كان فاسقا لا يستوون؟ إلهي وسيدي، فأسألك بالقدرة التي قدرتها، وبالقضية التي هتمتها وهكمتها، وغلبت من عليه أجريتها، أن تهب لي في هذه الليلة وفي هذه الساعة كل جرم أجرمته، وكل ذنب أذنبته، وكل قبيح أسررته، وكل جهل عملته كتمته أو أعلنته، أخفيته أو أظهرته، وكل سيئة أمرت بإثباتها الكرام الكاتبين الذين وكلتهم بحفظ ما يكون مني، وجعلتهم شهودا علي مع جوارحي، وكنت أنت الرقيب علي من ورائهم، والشاهد لما خفي عنهم، وبرحمتك أخفيته، وبفضلك سترته، وأن توفر حظي من كل خير أنزلته، أو إحسان فضلته، أو بر نشرته، أو رزق بسطته، أو ذنب تغفره، أو خطأ تستره جميعا. يا ربي يا ربي يا رب، يا ربي يا ربي يا رب، يا ربي يا ربي يا رب، يا إلهي وسيدي ومولاي ومالك رقي، يا من بيده ناصيتي، يا عليما بضري ومسكنتي، يا خبيرا بفقري خبيرا بفقري وفاقتي. يا ربي يا ربي يا رب، يا ربي يا ربي يا رب، يا ربي يا ربي يا رب. أسألك بحقك وقدسك وأعظم صفاتك وأسمائك أن تجعل أوقاتي من الليل والنهار بذكرك معمورة، وبخدمتك موصولة، وأعمالي عندك مقبولة، حتى تكون أعمالي وأورادي كلها وردا واحدا، وحالي في خدمتك سرمدا. يا سيدي يا من عليه معولي، يا من إليه شكوت أحوالي. يا ربي يا ربي يا رب، يا ربي يا ربي يا رب، يا ربي يا ربي يا رب. قو على خدمتك جواره، واجدد على العظيمة جوانح، وحبلي الجد في خشيتك، والدوام في الاتصال بخدمتك، حتى أصرح إليك في ميادين السابقين، وأسرع إليك في البارزين، وأشتاق إلى قربك في المشتاقين، وأدنو منك دنو المخلصين، أخافك مخافة الموقنين، واجتمع في جوارك مع المؤمنين. اللهم ومن أرادني بسوء فأرد، ومن كادني فكيد، واجعل لي من أحسن عبيدك نصيبا عندك، وأقربهم منزلة منك، وأخصهم زلفة لديك، فإنه لا ينال ذلك إلا بفضلك. وجد لي بجودك، واعتف علي بمجدك، واحفظني برحمتك، واجعل لساني بذكرك لهجام، وقلبي بحبك متيما، ومن علي بحسن إجابتك، وأقلني عثرتي، واغفر زلتي، فإنك قضيت على عبادك بعبادتك، وأمرتهم بدعائك، وضمنت لهم الإجابة، فإليك يا ربي نصبت وجهي، وإليك يا ربي مددت يدي، فبعزتك استجب لي دعائي، وبلغني منايا، ولا تقطع من فضلك رجائي، واكفني شر الجن والإنس من أعدائي. يا سريع الرضا، اغفر لمن لا يملك إلا الدعاء، فإنك فعال لما تشاء. يا من اسمه دوام، وذكره شفاء، وطاعته غنى، ارحم من رأس ماله الرجاء، وسلاحه البكاء. يا سابغ النعم، يا دافع النقم، يا نور المستوحشين في الظلم، يا عالما لا يعلم، صل على محمد وآل محمد، وافعل بي ما أنت أهله، وصلى الله على رسوله والأئمة الميامين من آله وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا. فاتحة.
پر دیجئے محمد و آل محمد. السلام کے چند اشعار. یہ کون ضعیف روتی ہے مقتل میں جھکائے سر, یہ کون ضعیف روتی ہے ایک ہاتھ رکھے دل پر, یہ کون ضعیف روتی ہے کرتی ہے فغاں یہ رو رو کر, ماں تجھ پہ فدا میرے دلبر. کیوں گرم زمین پر سوتا ہے, سن میری صدا میرے دلبر. بچھائے ہوئے چادر یہ کون ضعیف روتی ہے, پالا تھا تجھے اس مادر نے, دکھ جوگ گوا کر اے بیٹا. بازو پہ سلاتی تھی تجھ کو, خود جاگتی رہتی تھی تنہا. بس سوچ کے یہ منظر یہ کون ضعیف روتی ہے. اے میرے پیارے حسین آ جا, ماں کی آغوش ترستی ہے. آ جا اب میرے سینے پر, ہر لمحہ آگ برستی ہے. فریاد لیے لب پر یہ کون ضعیف روتی ہے. زخموں سے خاک ہٹاؤں گی, آ گود میں آ میرے پیاسے. کیوں تیرے لبوں تک نہ آیا, شکوا ہے مجھے اس دریا سے. دیکھا ہے ہر ایک منظر یہ کون ضعیف روتی ہے. تجھے زخم لگے تھے لاکھوں جب, یہ درد بھرا منظر دیکھا. اس غم سے نہ زینب مر جائے, کرنے لگی غم سے یہ نوحہ. ہے نہ ساتھ علی اکبر یہ کون ضعیف روتی ہے, مقتل میں جھکائے سر. درود پر دیجئے محمد و آل محمد.
محمد وآل محمد صلوات.
Before we begin, let's recite Surah Fatiha and ask Allah to give the thawab to all of the deceased, the marhumeen from our families, our communities, our friends, the ulama, the shuhada. Surah Mubarakatul Fatiha. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والسيد المرسلين والشفيع المذنبين سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد والصلاة والسلام على أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين المنتجبين لا سيما مولانا وسيدي صاحب العصر والزمان روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء وأجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف ولعنة دائمة على أعدائهم ومنكر فضائلهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين أما بعد رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. For the hastening of the advent to the return of our 12th Imam, Imam Al-Hujjah, one salawat upon Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. My dear brothers and sisters in Iman, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm cognizant of the fact that because of the Dua Kamil, we are obviously starting much later this evening, and obviously you all have work and school to get to tomorrow. So I'm going to do my best, inshallah, to keep it very brief tonight. Although the topic at hand is two portions of the supplication of the dua of our 12th Imam that we have been going through over these nights of Muharram. But I'm going to do my best to condense it as much as possible. Obviously much more could be said in these areas, but again we will limit our discussion tonight in the interest of time. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. You know, whenever any of us leave the home, whether it be to go to school or to go to work, to go out for a walk, maybe go on vacation, probably the very first thing that we'll do after packing and making all those other necessary requirements is we'll check our weather app to see what the weather will be like for short-term, long-term forecast so that we can plan accordingly. Do we have to take a jacket? Do we take an umbrella? If it's sunny, should we apply lotion and some kind of topical cream to protect ourselves from the sun? This is a reality that I'm sure all of us go through, to protect ourselves from the outside elements that would affect us physically. We do the utmost to ensure that we are safeguarded. But a question comes up as we go through this discussion of the supplication of our 12th Imam, is that do we take due diligence when it comes to protecting our soul? When we leave the home, we're sure to protect ourselves from the rain or the snow or the heat. But do we do the same protection to safeguard us from the sins that are around us? This evening, I want to look at two lines from the dua of our 12th Imam, in which he focuses our attention on two specific organs within the human body. Although they're very small, physically speaking, there are two very small input mediums we have into our heart. But he shows us, and we see in the ayat of the Quran and in the hadith, that these two very small organs that are acting as input sources actually have a large control over us as human beings. The lines of the Imam, when he makes his supplication, and again, it's obviously teaching you and I to supplicate to Allah for these things, and also to put them into a practical application within our lives, is he says, وَغْذُذْ أَبَسَارَنَا عَنِ الْفُجُورِ وَالْخِيَانَ, that help me to protect my eyes, what I look at, from sins, from acts of rebellion against you. And he says, وَسْدُدْ أَسْمَاءَنَا عَنِ اللَّغْوِ وَالْغِيبَ, and also allow me to safeguard my ears, to block my ears from hearing both the laghu, which we can define as being things which are wasteful to listen to, and also of ghiba, of backbiting. And so inshallah this evening I want to try and go through both of these aspects of the supplication of the Imam, and to see how the Quran and obviously the hadith of the 14 infallibles guides us in these two regards and aspects of life. Salu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. The first point of the Imam is he focuses on the eyes and what we see. And he looks at it from two points. He says from fujur, from acts and khiyana, which are translated roughly the same. They have about the same meaning. Basically saying that, oh Allah, give me the ability to protect what I look, to protect myself from looking at things which are against what you have ordained, which are acts of immorality. And you know, when we look at the world around us today, it's not just protecting our eyes from when we leave from home to go to work, or when we're at work, or when we're at school. You know, there was a time when it was just sins were limited to when you leave your home. But today, because of the use of technology, because of all of these gadgets that we have in our hand, in our pocket, a person doesn't even have to leave home to commit a sin. Protecting our eyes today isn't just when we go down to the beach or the lakefront. Protecting our eyes is these, you know, this gadget that we have, this technology in our hand. Internet, satellite, television, all of these ways that our eyes can be tempted to look at the impermissible. And obviously, as technology progresses, we see how it becomes more and more easier to commit sins. You know, I like to tell my younger brothers and sisters, as I do in other gatherings, that for those who are 40 or 50 years old, they would know this better. That when those people who are in their 40s and 50s were your age, young teenagers, for us to commit sins back in the day, it was difficult. If we wanted to listen to music which was haram, it wasn't easy. You had to go and buy the physical record. You had to sneak it into the home without your parents seeing it. You know, you maybe didn't have headphones. It was a difficult thing to do haram. But today, with the smartphones and the technology our children have, they just have to go and stream it off of YouTube or download it from iTunes, and our parents and the parents don't even know what the children are doing. Back in the day, to commit any number of sins was a difficult thing. You had to go out of the home. You had to go downtown. You had to go somewhere where that sin was happening. But today, because of this proliferation of technology, our children literally are carrying the devices of sins within their hand. And it's not enough to just block the Wi-Fi connection at home, put a filter on it. It's not enough for the schools to put filters. Rather, we have to inoculate our children from the get-go. That why do we not do certain things? Why are these genres of music haram? Why is it not allowed to listen to certain things? Why is it not permissible to look at certain things? We can filter and block as much as we want. Just like when we apply sunscreen when we go out, we apply that to protect us, but ultimately the UV rays will still hit our body. So you can filter, you can block, you can limit, but guess what? When our children become 14, 15, 16, they're at school where there are no filters. They're at their friend's home. They're at the cafe. There is open internet access. All of those sins that we try to keep them away from at home, they now have a world of opportunity to access that. So the point being is that it's not enough to just inoculate ourselves and our children. We have to explain and give them a realization of why these things are detrimental. Detrimental for our world to come, for the akhirat, obviously. But even in this world, there are problems associated with what we look at, with what we listen to. And you can obviously refer to experts who have delved into the human psychology and why these things are a problem. and why they may start off as innocent things that we're doing, but they have the potential to bring our children to the brink of the pits of not only the hellfire, but even the loss of the, you know, productivity in this particular life. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allah talks about the power of the eyes and the hearing in many verses of the Quran. The most defined verse of the sight of what we should or should not look at, men and women, because I don't want to just give this to the men and that the women feel that they're left off the hook, nor vice versa, because all of us have a responsibility. In chapter 24, Surah Nur, the chapter of light, the Surah of light, there are two particular verses in where Allah addresses the concept of what we look at. And let me, before I give you the verse, the summary of it, let me give you the history of why it was revealed to Rasulullah. Because we know that every verse that came to the Prophet was for a particular reason. It wasn't just out of the blue Allah revealed a verse. Something was happening at the time of the Prophet, something the companions were experiencing, something the Ahlul Bayt were going through, and Allah would reveal revelation to deal with that circumstance. So Surah Nur, Surah 24, verse number 30 in particular, and verse 31. What happened is one day in Medina, the Prophet is obviously alive at this time, and in the alleyways of Medina, a young man is walking. He's walking in the alleyway, and a young, attractive woman crosses paths with him. He's walking one day, the woman is walking the opposite direction. Now at that time, keep in mind that hijab was always there in Islam. Islam didn't bring the hijab, Islam completed the hijab. There's a difference. Islam didn't say, okay, women were not covering and now you should cover. Islam says, women you were covering, now add a bit more to it. As with many of the obligations in Islam, they were there in the pre-Islamic culture, going back to previous prophets and dispensations. Islam came to perfect that particular aspect of religion. So the man and woman, they crossed paths. The woman had her hijab tied in a way where her ears were open and it was tied behind her neck. We sometimes see this style within some of our sisters when they want to become fashionable in hijab, is they'll choose styles which are out of the normal, out of the norm. So this woman, her neck was open, their ears were open, the front of her, obviously her chest was, you know, you could see her shape, and he passed by her. And he passed by her and they passed, but guess what? He turned back to look at her. And he kept looking and looking and looking, and he's walking and he's looking at this woman, and he bumps into something, he looks down and his chest is covered in blood. He hit a bone or a glass, or there's something that was sticking out of one of the walls in the alleyway, and he finds he cut his chest a bit. So he got upset. You know, he thought to himself, well, why did this woman tempt me? She's dressing provocatively, she's seductive, she's trying to allure me. And he wanted to blame the woman for what he did. As many times we as men do it, we say, well, why was she dressed like that? If she didn't want me to look at her, she should have covered a bit more up. So this man, he runs to Rasulullah. He runs to the Messenger of God and he says, Ya Rasulullah, I have a bone to pick. I got a problem. Rasulullah says, what's wrong? What's up? And he says that, look what happened to me. So he explains to the Prophet, this woman was walking and, you know, she was very provocative. She was dressed in this way. And I didn't realize where I was walking and I bumped into something. So basically he was saying that it's the woman's fault that she tempted me. So why don't you get Allah to reveal a verse telling the women to cover up? Because we men can't control ourselves, so let's put our women in a tent, and that way we can be free to work in society. The verse comes down to Rasulullah from Surah Nur, again, 24, verse number 30 and 31, where Allah says, قُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ. Allah says, tell the believing men. He doesn't tell the women, he says, tell the believing men to lower their gaze and guard their modesty, not to look at women, even if they're not dressed appropriately, in a seductive fashion. Allah could have twisted the verse around it. Allah could have said, women, cover yourself up. Why are you being, you know, temptresses in society? But no, Allah told the Prophet, tell this man and tell all of us as men in this room that we have to control ourselves. Even if women are not wearing the proper hijab, that doesn't give us a right to look at them in a bad way. Just because women are not observing their obligation, that doesn't mean that we as men have right to treat them in a negative way. Whether they're Muslim or not, it doesn't make a difference. Islam doesn't say you treat non-Muslim women in a certain way and Muslims in a certain way. There's obviously rules in terms of the covering and what is you can look at. And I don't want to go into the ahkam specifics tonight, the jurisprudence. You can look those up in the Risala of your Marja. But the general gist of this is that Allah told the men that yes, maybe women in your society won't be dressing as they should. But to protect yourself, to safeguard your own respect, your own esteem, don't look at those women in a negative way. And that obviously goes for all of us as believers. And we have to be cognizant of that. That whether we're at the mall or we're at the center, if there are women dressed however they are, we don't gawk at them. Sometimes people tell me, not in this community but in other centers, that the women are waiting for their husband or their, the son to pick them up on the ladies' side, and men are congregating around the women's entrance, waiting for them. Well, today with technology, we all have cell phones. We can easily, message our wife or our daughter or our mother or grandmother and ask them, when you're ready, let me know, I'll come out. But when we stand around their entrance, maybe we're not looking at them, but sometimes women feel uncomfortable. They don't want to have those men around there. So we have to be cognizant of that fact. And we have to, as the verse says, that lower our gaze. Now lowering the gaze, as the scholars of the Quran mention, it doesn't mean you walk around with your eyes completely shut. That you keep your head down and you don't see where you're going and you bump into people. As some people tend to understand this verse. No, it means that you lower the intensity of your gaze. You're not going to stare at that woman. Or the woman is not going to stare at the man, vice versa. Because the verse that follows, Allah tells the women, you also don't look and stare at men in an inappropriate fashion. So it goes for both genders, that men with women, women with men, and obviously even within the same gender, and I don't want to talk about that tonight. But we have to realize that Allah gave us as men the obligation to lower our gaze, to guard our modesty, to protect ourselves first of all. And then Allah reminded the women that you also have a role to play in society. It's a combination. It is a effort between both of the genders to help each and every one of us, to help one another, to prepare ourselves for the return of our 12th Imam, Imam Al-Hujjah, Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajuhu Sharif. We also have to appreciate that when Allah talked about the hijab, and here I use the term hijab very loosely, not just a scarf on the head, but rather that hijab is an entire way of life for men and for women. Sometimes as men we tend to think, well, only our wives, our daughters have hijab, and I can go out dressed however I want. And we have to realize that just as our sisters have a form of hijab, it's their unique way, their identity as a woman is how they cover. Allah tells us that we as men also have a form of covering. So sometimes you see young men who obviously spend a lot of time at the gym, they work out, and they wear tight, tight shirts to show off their physique, and they wear tight, tight pants to show their body off to the opposite gender. This we know is not hijab for a man. To show off the shape of the man is also equally as haram as it is for the women. Sometimes we'll see that men, for example, will go to a co-ed swimming pool where men and women are swimming together. This also we know is haram. Not that it's makruh, not that it's discouraged, it's forbidden. If a man is baligh, a young boy is at that age of maturity, to go to a pool, a public pool, or to the beach, and to wear what they wear on the beach, this in itself is not hijab. And just as we don't expect our sisters to go out in what women usually wear at a beach, men also are not permitted. But hijab goes more than that. And we'll probably talk about this in a couple of nights when we look at one of the other lines of the dua, addressed to the women of our community. But just suffice it to mention that hijab is not only a cloth or the way I dress, but it's also a mindset. What good is hijab if I'm flirting with the opposite gender? Whether it be in person, or I'm on my phone sending those inappropriate text messages and pictures and WhatsApp messages, that's not hijab. That's not hijab if you're flirting with somebody of the opposite gender, but you're still wearing a scarf on your head. And so Allah shows us, and the Ahlul Bayt and the Prophet show us, that hijab is much more deeper than that. And protecting the eyes is not just, you know, one or two things. It's an entire way of how we deal with people within our society. Again, whether they be Muslim or whether they be of another tradition. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. There's a famous tradition that I'm sure we've all heard. And I'll repeat it just for the sake of those who haven't heard it yet, about this concept of looking at the opposite gender. You know, they sometimes say, well, the first look is okay. And as the hadith tells us, that when two non-mahrams, that is two people, a man and a woman who are not related by blood or marriage, for example, that's not your spouse, your son, your daughter, those relationships, when your eyes lock and you meet and you see one another, that first look, we're told, is permissible. Meaning that it's not that you're checking them out, that you want to see how they are. You're just walking, you're passing in the street or in the center or wherever you are, and you see one another. The hadith says that that first look is okay, it's not a problem. But then the hadith says that second look, when you continue to look at one another, that's where the problem comes. And we're told that that second look is against you, meaning that that becomes the sin. That's where the sin begins. And the hadith says when that third look happens, when that gaze continues to happen, then the hadith says that is where the destruction of the human being lies. That's where corruption can begin within a society. That's when, you know, problems of infidelity happen, when issues between man and a woman outside of the sphere of marriage have the potential to take place. And so we're told that, you know, rather than getting to that stage of perhaps something happening, is that you try to cut the challenge or cut the problem from the source, from the root. And that you ensure that when the genders interact, they're done in a respectable way, they're done within the boundaries of Islam. And we know that our maraja, our scholars, have given us these boundaries, whether it's gatherings such as this, or mixed gatherings, and we have educational sessions. The rulings are clear on how the genders have to interact, how they should be separated from one another. So I don't want to go into that. You can refer to your scholars to find those rulings out. But we see that Islam looks at it as going to the root, not to treat something after the problem has come within society, but to ensure that it is cut off before it becomes a problem. Now that doesn't mean that, okay, because you can't look, you can't talk, well, you know, the challenge comes up as many youth will say, well, how do I get married then? Because if I can't talk to the other person, how do I get to know them? And I don't want to, again, talk about that in too much detail, but it's interesting that after these two verses about hijab in Surah Nur, right after that, Allah begins to talk about marriage in Islam and how the single men and single women should go forth and find their spouse and get married. And Allah tells us if they're poor, they don't have, you know, a good job, they don't have income, Allah says, don't worry about it, get married, and Allah will take care of everything that will come after it. So I found it interesting that Allah draws this chain through the hijab, through men and women having a hijab, but then telling us that, you know what, marriage is after that. So in a way, it's an indication that when it comes to marriage, obviously, you know, that this hijab has to be an aspect of the pre-marriage ceremonies, we can say, of how men and women meet one another. And again, it's not my topic. There are so many ways. There are matchmakers in the community. There are websites. There are things that happen within our society to get the young men and women, or even the elderly, if they're looking to get married. So we have many ways and methods that are available at our disposal. But it just becomes interesting how Allah ties all of this together. And that as a community, obviously, we, I think, owe it to our younger generation to do whatever it is that we can do to facilitate marriage. You know, sometimes we see our institutions, our national, international bodies, they'll arrange for marriage sessions in our back home countries. And that's all well and good. But when we see that we have youth within our societies today who are suffering with, you know, university loans to pay off, and so when you ask, why aren't you getting married? They say, well, I've got a big loan to pay. I can't afford the expenses of marriage. Then maybe it becomes an obligation on our communities, our institutions, to help facilitate the marriage of the young men and women. Not only helping them find a spouse, but making it very practical and easy for them to get married. Give them loans to help them pay their, you know, school tuition off. Help them maybe get, you know, on their own 2 feet. And to facilitate and help in that process to ensure the safeguarding of their iman, of their faith, and obviously of the future generations to come. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Let me go now on to the next part of the dua. Once the 12th Imam focuses on our eyes and to ensure that this is protected, that we don't look at the haram, we don't look at the forbidden, that we keep our sight away from those things which Allah does not want us to look at. Not because, again, that not that God is a vengeful God or He's jealous. No, but He realizes that there is a harm in our day-to-day life when we are polluting ourselves with looking at the impermissible. And again, you can read studies. I don't want to mention a lot of the things on the minbar because of the audience. But you can read the studies of when people get involved in the sins of the eye, of how that affects a relationship, how between husband and wife issues come up, and how problems can cement within that relationship. So again, to remove those before they even begin, Allah tells us, be careful of what you look at. Be careful of what you take in with this input device that Allah has given us. But once the 12th Imam looks at that aspect, he goes to another part of us, which is our ears, what we hear. And he says, wasdud asma'ana anil laghwi wal ghiba. O Allah, give me that spiritual power to keep my ears away from listening to what he calls laghw and ghiba. Laghw in a general definition is whatever is a waste of time. Listening to something which has no benefit to it, which would actually get us away from Allah. It's used in the Quran in about 2 or 3 different ayat. And when scholars interpret what this word means and the passage in general, most of the time, if not all of them, they say that this refers to the haram music that is out in the world today. We talked about this a few nights ago, about there is a differentiation. There are sounds which we can listen to which are halal. There is music, as Ayatollah Sistani says in his Risala, music which is halal. And there is music which is haram. Obviously, we have to look at his definition, how he defines those two, and better understand it for ourselves. But I think we can safely say that a vast majority of what is out there today, a vast majority which is on the social media and all of these places where you can buy music, is of the haram type. And if we try to fool ourselves and say, well, no, it doesn't really fall into that category, then we're just trying to pull the wool over our own eyes. But as we mentioned on the first night, that we ourselves are a witness over our own nafs, on our own soul. So when the 12th Imam says that, keep us away from listening to lahu, one of the manifestations of this is that form of haram music, which can take us away from Allah, which the lyrics are provocative, maybe they're filled with profanity, there's nothing good in the content of the words. But even as our scholars mentioned, that it's not only the lyrical content, it's also the composition. And so they say that you have to look at both aspects. If the composition is something which you would find in places where acts of haram would take place, acts of debauchery, then that becomes a forbidden form of music. But there are genres, there are styles of poetry, for example, of spoken word, of the Prophet, of the Ahlul Bayt, which don't involve that component of the forbidden style. And so if that is available, if that's present, then obviously that is something which is permissible to listen to. It wouldn't entail us breaking the rules of Allah and going against this objective of the dua of our 12th Imam. But the second part, and I just wanted to focus a bit more on that one tonight, is where the 12th Imam says that protect us from listening to ghiba, backbiting. We talked about it again briefly a few nights ago. I wanted to further elaborate on this because it's an actual part of the dua. And it's interesting that the Imam would bring about this term or this topic of ghiba. It should show us the importance of keeping away from this sin, the sin of talking bad about another believer. The definition that I wanted to present of ghiba is this, where we're told that ghiba is when we seek to undermine the reputation, the character of another believer. It can be generalized as another human being, but I'll give it more specifically in our context as a believer. So when we seek to undermine somebody's character, somebody's status within the society, by saying things about them when they're not there that they can't defend themselves about, that becomes ghiba. If you look in the book, The Major Sins, that again I referred to a few nights ago from Shaheed Dastighaib Shirazi, in sin number 41, he talks about the sin of ghiba, the sin of backbiting. And he gives a very lengthy discussion. And it's very interesting in how some of the examples of ghiba that he gives. He talks about not just saying something bad about somebody, but you know, sometimes we may have a habit that we're talking to a friend about a third person, and we'll say, you know that brother Ali? And your friend will say, which Ali? There's 30 Alis in our community. You say, you know, the one who's a bit fat, he's balding on top. That, we're told, is a form of ghiba. Because you're describing somebody how they wouldn't like to be described. Or you give them, you talk about them in a characteristic that they have. It's a part of their character. No, you know, they may be overweight. They might be balding. They may have gray hair. They might wear glasses. But maybe they don't appreciate you talking about them in that way. So scholars even say that that becomes a form of ghiba. Another example is, let's say you're not talking about them, but you're talking something about their life. You say, you know that sister Fatima, you know they live in a really tiny 1200 square foot home, and it looks bad, it's painted bad, it's this and it's that. But when you're talking about her home in that way, you're basically doing a form of character assassination. You're saying, well, they're cheap, or you know they're poor, they can't afford it. And so you're making them, you know, bad in the eyes of the person by relating to something that they have. Shaheed Dastighaib even goes to that extent to say that is also a form of ghiba. And the reason why I say this is that ghiba is one of those sins which is one of the most difficult to recompense for. The hadith from our Prophet tells us that if you had two sinners, one who did adultery, sexual relations outside of marriage, and you had somebody who did ghiba, backbiting, the one who did adultery is in a better position with Allah, because they can ask Allah for forgiveness and Allah can forgive them straight ahead, no problem. But when we do ghiba, when we talk about somebody, guess what? I have to go to that person and tell them, I talked bad about you, can you forgive me? Now can you imagine if I said, yeah, Ali, that fat guy, he's short, pudgy, balding, and now I have to go and tell him, you know what, I talk bad about you, and this is what I said about you. Can you forgive me? It's a challenge, if you think about it. I mean, it's easy for me to say, astaghfirullah. I can do that at home. But ghiba is I go to the person and I tell them, I talk bad about you in public. I said something negative about you. Can you forgive me for what I said? And if they don't forgive you, we're in a pretty difficult situation on the Day of Judgment. Because them not forgiving us means that, as the hadith tell us, that they take our good actions, and we, if we have no good actions left, take on their sins on the Day of Judgment. So there becomes a shift in the balance of good and bad. And if we don't do that repentance, if we don't go to them and say, hey, I talk bad about you, right? It becomes a great challenge. And again, with technology today, it becomes even multiplied, because it's not just me talking to one person in my community. Today I go on a Facebook and I make a comment and I hit post, and every person on my friend list, 10,000 friends, read that post about that person. Now how do I go to 10,000 people? And then my friend maybe reposted on their Facebook wall, and then their friend reposted it, and it goes on and on and on. So how do I now go on Facebook? or Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and I have to make amends for every person who may have read that post, you can see it becomes almost impossible. And if it's not for the forgiveness of Allah on the Day of Judgment, then we have a weighty price to pay. You know, there's a story that scholars talk about to give us this understanding of what it means to do ghibah and to ask forgiveness. And they say that a man one time backbit another believer. And so the man said, okay, no problem, I'll forgive you on one condition. He says, you take this pillow full of feathers, go to the downtown of the city and open it up and just let all the feathers go into the air. So the man said, well, that's pretty easy. Just take a pillow downtown, for example, downtown Vancouver, open up the pillow, let the feathers fly where they may, and all my sins are forgiven. So he does the act, and he goes back to the man. He says, okay, I took the pillow, I opened it up, I let the feathers go. Am I done? He says, no, it's not that easy. He goes, now go back and collect all those feathers and put them back in the pillow and bring me the pillow back. And he's like, how am I going to do that? The pillows have flown in the wind this direction, that direction. They've gone everywhere. And the man said that is what ghibat is. That is what, when you talk bad about me, that's what you've done. You've spread those feathers so far that now it's impossible for you to gather them all back together again. So the 12th Imam reminds us that this is a major problem that we have to deal with. Maybe we have that sin, maybe we don't. We also have to realize that ghiba is a sin, backbiting is a sin, not only the one who's doing it, but those who listen to it are also as guilty as the one who's speaking bad. Why? Well, it's simple. If you want there to listen, nobody listen to the person talking bad, then nobody can talk bad about anybody in our society, unless they're going to talk to a wall. But when we give our fellow believers the opportunity to have us listen to them, then we become a partner in the crime. We become a partner in the crime and a partner in the sin. So yes, they have done wrong by talking about somebody else, but we have been equally unfair by listening to it and not countering what they were saying with good words about that person, what we know about them. And so when we listen to it, then we become a partner in the crime, a partner in the sin, and then we also become a partner in having to ask forgiveness from that individual for what we had heard. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. But there are times in Islam that ghibat becomes allowed, where you can talk about another believer. And I wanted to mention three of the examples that our scholars give us, because these will probably be, you know, pertinent to our life, that we may come across a time when we have to talk bad, relate things that a person is doing to somebody else. And keep in mind, there are only about four or five examples, and again, you can refer to the writings of our scholars where they give us the breakdown of where it's allowed to commit certain actions like this. One of the examples that we have is in terms of business relations. Maybe you have two people who want to enter into partnership, or a few people who want to enter into partnership and start a business. You find out about it, but you know that one of those two people has a bit of a shady past. Maybe they were cheating a fellow business person before. They've involved themselves in something which is not ethically, morally correct, and you know that they were guilty of it in the past, and they haven't really changed their ways. They're still, you know, in that sort of mindset. Scholars tell us, based on the hadith, that when you find that kind of a situation, then you're allowed to go and approach the other party and say, you know what, you're getting into this business dealing with another person. I thought you should know that this person has a past in terms of what you're getting into. Now, obviously, you have to be careful that you don't expose too much about them. You don't go past the limits and drag their personal life into the situation. But only in that area which would affect that business dealing, you're allowed to warn that individual. Another example we have, which is maybe more relevant to our lives, is in terms of marriage. You know, sometimes there'll be a young lady or a young man in the community who wants to get married, and we have this matchmaking system where the aunties and uncles will get together, and they'll call somebody and they'll ask your input. Do you know this man? Do you know this young lady? And if they call you and you know something bad about either party, sometimes maybe we're a bit apprehensive. You know, should I talk bad about them? It's their future, their marriage. If I say that this person is, you know, doing this or doing that, then maybe they won't get married and they'll find out and get upset at me. But our scholars tell us when it comes to the issue of marriage, because it's such a sensitive issue, you know, you don't want your daughter being married off to a drunkard or you know, one who abuses women. And you don't want your son to maybe be get married to a woman who has a past which is very nefarious. So we're told that when those kinds of issues come up, and you know for a fact that that person has those negative traits, and they continue, not that they did it in the past, and they've changed, and they mend their ways, and now they're on the straight course, but you know they're continuously doing those actions, and that that would be, you know, that would bring some problem into that marriage, then scholars say that there you can do that form of ghibah to that extent where you can let that person know that, you know, this person that you're looking about for marriage, they do have these quirks within their life. You know, they do involve themselves in certain things. And that if you, you know, want to go through the marriage, just be aware that there are some flaws in that individual's character. Now, obviously, again, this would be at a level where it's going to be, you know, a detriment to the other party to marry that person. If it's something small, not a major sin, it's just, you know, maybe something you've seen once in a while. Obviously, use your own judgment. Think about it. Well, is that something major that's going to affect the life of that other individual? And if it's not, then obviously there's no need to mention, no need to go into those specifics. But we see that there are those times when ghibat becomes a necessity. And the last and the final one, and we'll end with this for this part of the dua, on protecting our ears from listening to ghiba, backbiting, is when people do sins in the open. You know, there's one time when a person does a sin and he or she asks forgiveness, and forgiveness is obviously is from Allah, and they don't repeat that action again. So they have been cleared by Allah. So even within our heart, we should forget about that. They've done repentance, they've fulfilled their obligations, they've turned back to Allah. Now there's no need to hark on that and say, well, you did this 10 years ago. No, they're a changed man, they're a changed woman. But what about, and people ask this, what about when you're on Facebook and you see somebody's posting that they're at the bar and they have a bottle of beer in their hand or some alcohol, or they're in a nightclub and there's pictures of them dancing? Is that considered ghibah if you tell, or you, it comes up in a conversation that they're involving themselves in those kinds of haram acts? Scholars tell us that because that sin is done in the open, they're not hiding it from people. In fact, they're sharing it with the world. Their profile is an open profile. You can see their pictures on Facebook, what they post in their timeline. Because they're not embarrassed to share their personal life, there's no embarrassment on the behalf of a believer that they can not necessarily spread it to the world, but if it comes up in a conversation, to talk about it. Because that individual, they may not have that haya, that modesty, to keep it hidden. They're showing it and they're sharing it. And so, again, we use logic and our common sense when we do these things, but if it ever came to it that we had to speak about it, scholars say it's not a sin on our record if that was talked about. There's no need to go and ask for forgiveness, to ask any, you know, anything from that individual, because they were not afraid to break the rules of Allah in the open. And so we as a believer don't have to be those who make those amends for that particular scenario. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. As we continue in these nights of Muharram, we come to the fifth night of the martyrdom of Sayyidina Shuhada alayhi salam, and we reflect on so many of these beloved companions of Abu Abdullah alayhi salam who gave everything that they had on the day of Ashura. And tonight we remember one of the most senior of the companions of Imam Hussein, one who would be called in our culture a senior citizen, an elderly gentleman. But he may have been old in age, but definitely he was not old in his outlook and his support for Abu Abdullah. And tonight I want to focus on the beloved companion Habib ibn Madahir. Habib, who was a man of strength and of fortitude. We're told in the books of history that he was born just around the time that Rasulullah began the prophetic mission. Around 12 or 13 years before the Hijrah, Habib ibn Madahir is born into the tribe of Bani Asad in the country of Yemen. He's born in Yemen and at the age of about 13 or 14, or around that age, he migrates with his family and the tribe to Medina. When Rasulullah made the journey, Habib ibn Madahir, a young teenager, about 15 years old, he also goes towards Medina to be in the company of Rasulullah. Habib ibn Madahir becomes close to Rasulullah. He becomes close to the Ahlul Bayt, so much so that even Imam Hassan and Hussein, alayhum as-salam, that when they were growing up, they looked to Habib ibn Madahir as an older sibling, as an older brother who could look out after them and be with them and play with them. The historians say that Habib ibn Madahir was with the Prophet that entire time until the demise of Rasulullah. One of the du'as of Habib as he was growing up, he always used to ask Rasulullah, he would say, Ya Rasulullah, make du'a for me that I can become a shaheed in your way. Pray for me to become a martyr in one of the battles that you fight. And every time that Rasulullah would go for a battle to defend Islam, and Habib ibn Madahir, who at this time would have been a young man, a young teenager, he would accompany Rasulullah and the companions. But every time that he would finish the battle, he would come back to the city of Medina. And he would feel within his heart that why did Allah not accept my dua to become a martyr with Rasulullah? After that time that Rasulullah passes away, Habib ibn Madahir begins to grow older and older. Eventually Imam Ali takes on the Khilafat. He becomes the Caliph of the Muslim community. Habib ibn Madahir stands firm with the Ahlul Bayt. Habib begins to accompany Amir al-Mu'mineen on the battles that Imam Ali fought. Habib ibn Madahir, every time he would go with Imam Ali to the battlefield, he would ask his Mawla, he would say, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. He would say, make dua to Allah for me. He goes, I asked Rasulullah to make dua. Now you make dua that I can become a martyr in your way in one of your battles. Every time Habib would go to the battle with Imam Ali, he would become victorious, but he would come back home alive. This continued for one battle, for two battles, for three battles. Eventually Imam Ali alayhi salam leaves this world. Habib ibn Madahir is still there. Fast forward to after the time of Imam Hassan, Habib ibn Madahir is becoming an old man. He's now in his early 70s. He's in the city of Kufa. We're told in the books of Maqtal that when all those 30,000 letters were being written to Imam Hussein, asking Sayyidul Shuhada to come to Kufa to be the Imam of the community, that one particular letter was signed by five individuals, one of them being Habib. He wrote a letter to Imam Hussein, reminding him of their early friendship and asking him to come to Kufa to be the Imam over the community. As Sayyidul Shuhada makes his way to Karbala, as Imam Hussein embarks on that land of Karbala, Habib ibn Madahir has been stuck in the city of Kufa. It's a few days before the day of Ashura. If Imam Hussein looks at his family, he looks at his companions, he looks around to see who is with him. He realizes that Habib isn't with me today. He remembers that Habib had written him a letter a few months before asking him to come to Kufa. Imam Hussein sees that Habib isn't there. Imam Hussein sends a secret letter with a messenger to Habib ibn Madahir in the city of Kufa. The messenger comes to the door of Habib. He knocks at the door in the darkness of the night. Habib opens the door and he sees a messenger from Imam Hussein. The messenger hands Habib a letter. Habib opens up the letter and he begins to read the letter. The letter says that this is from your Habib. This is from Hussein ibn Ali. He says that you had written that you would support us. He says, now I need your help, O Habib. We're stuck in this land of Karbala. Please come to our assistance. As the guard is waiting outside of the house, Habib ibn Madahir runs into the house. His wife sees him. She says, Habib, who was at the door? Habib begins to tell his wife. He says, this is a letter from my beloved Hussein. This is from my master Hussein. He's stuck in Karbala. He's calling for me. I have to go and see my master. Habib says, but every time, he says that I've gotten to such an old age, and how can I now go and work and help my imam? His wife says to him, she says, Oh Habib, you have to go and help your imam. She says, if you can't go, I will go and represent you with Imam Hussein. Your son will go with me. Our servant will go. We will represent you on the day that Imam Hussein will give his life. Habib ibn Madahir gathers up the strength. He goes to his servant and he tells him to get my horse ready and take my horse to the outskirts of Kufa. I'll meet you there in the dark of the night. Habib pays his last farewells to his family. He goes outside of the house. He goes towards their rendezvous point. He meets his slave and he takes the horse. The slave says to Habib, he says, "Are you going towards Jannat and you're keeping me here towards the fire of hell?" He says, "Why can't I come with you to help your beloved Imam as well?" Habib says to him, he says, "You are now free. You do as you wish." Brothers and sisters, Habib Ibn Madahir makes his way in a stealth fashion towards the camp of Imam Hussein. We're told that in the darkness of the night, he's traveling towards Imam Hussein. In the evening time and the night time, Imam Hussein, Abu Fadl Abbas, they begin to see some dust rising up in the darkness of the night. They see somebody is approaching their camp. As this person becomes closer and closer, Imam Hussein realizes that this is none other than Habib Ibn Madahir. Habib falls off his horse. He lands at the feet of Imam Hussein. He apologizes to his Imam for being so late. The friends have one embrace. Imam Hussein reminds him that this is going to be a battle to the death, that you may not have become shaheed at the time of Rasulullah. You did not lose your life at the time of my father, Imam Ali. But definitely this is the time that Habib is going to lose his life. We fast forward to the day of Ashura. Brothers and sisters, as companions are going one after the other to the plains of Karbala, Habib ibn Madahir, a 75-year-old senior, but the brave warrior of Imam Hussein, he finally, he's had enough of this situation. Abu Hamza al-Thumama, he begins to tell Imam Hussein that the time of the prayer has come. Abu Thumama makes the adhan. Imam Hussein begins to pray the Salatul Khawf on the day of Ashura. At one point, one of the enemy forces proclaims to Imam Hussein, he says that your prayers will not be accepted, O Hussein. Habib ibn Madahir becomes enraged at this infidel's words. He says, "Curse be upon you. How can you say that the son of the grand, how can you say that the grandson of Rasulullah's salat is not accepted and that your prayers will be?" Habib asks Imam Hussein, he says, "Give me permission to go towards the battle." Habib, the 75-year-old man, goes towards the battlefield. The books of Maqtal mention that even though he was such an aged man, he kills at least 60 of the enemy forces. Eventually, Habib is attacked. One man runs up from behind. He strikes Habib on the sword with his on the forehead with his sword. We're told that Habib's head splits open. His blood begins to flow from his body. Another enemy comes forth. He severs the head of Habib ibn Madahir. Imam Hussein, realizing this, rushes to the battlefield. He rushes to see the severed head of his beloved friend Habib. The enemies take the head of Habib ibn Madahir. And Habib, the longtime friend of Imam Hussein, leaves this world. And Imam Hussein is left to grieve over the loss of such a beloved friend and such a beloved lover of the Ahlul Bayt. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. Matame Hussein.
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Gunji ba waqt asr sada, main Hussein hu, Gunji ba waqt asr sada, main Hussein hu. Kaato na mera khushk gala, haan kaato na mera khushk gala, main Hussein hoon. Goonji ba waqt asr sada, main Hussein hoon. Goonji ba waqt asr sada,
main Hussein hoon.
Sukhi hui hai shimr mere halq ki rage, sukhi hui hai shimr mere halq ki rage, aahista tu churi ko chala, aahista tu churi ko chala, main Hussein hoon. Gunji ba waqt asr sada, मैं हुसैन हूँ जी बावत असर सदा
मैं हुसैन हूँ
अम्मा किसी ने पानी की एक बूंद भी ना दी अम्मा किसी ने पानी की एक बूंद भी ना दी कहता रहा हाँ मैं बार बार कहता रहा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा
मैं हुसैन हूँ
कटता हुआ गला मेरा देखा ना जाएगा कटता हुआ गला मेरा देखा ना जाएगा नाना मैं हूँ नवासा तेरा हाँ नाना मैं हूँ नवासा तेरा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा
मैं हुसैन
बेबाजुओं की लाश तड़प कर उलट गई बेबाजुओं की लाश तड़प कर उलट गई आई फुरात पर जो सदा आई फुरात पर जो सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा
मैं हुसैन हूँ
जानू पे रख के सर को कहा एक ज़ईफ ने जानू पे रख के सर को कहा एक ज़ईफ ने अकबर कहा है दर्द बता हाँ अकबर कहा है दर्द बता मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ ऐ शामियों का फन्ना दिया मुझको गम नहीं ऐ शामियों का फन्ना दिया मुझको गम नहीं दे दो मेरी बहन को रिदा हाँ दे दो मेरी बहन को रिदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा
मैं हुसैन हूँ
महसूस अब भी होता है ये जायरीन को महसूस अब भी होता है ये जायरीन को रोजे से आ रही है सदा हाँ रोजे से आ रही है सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ गूंजी बवक्त असर सदा मैं हुसैन हूँ या हुसैन
या हुसैन
सजद में ज़ैनब हूँ मेरे सर पे रिदा कोई नहीं बाजार जफा सजद में ज़ैनब हूँ मेरे सर पे रिदा कोई नहीं
بازار جفان میرے سر تیرے دا کوئی نہ مجمع ہے کوفیوں کا میرے چلنے کی جا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میں زینب ہوں میرے سر تیرے دا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجادے میرے سر سے نو بار چنی چادر بدوین میں نبی آدی پھر وائی گئی در در مل جائے ردا مجھ کو اور میری دعا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجادے میں اب ہوں میرے سر پہ ردا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میں زینب ہوں سجاد چندوں کیسے دا کون تماشائی یاد آتے ہیں رہ رہ کے عباس میرا بھائی فریاد کرو کس سے اب تیرے سوا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میں زینب ہوں میرے سر تیرے دا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میرے دل کو یہ درد ستاتا ہے سرغازی کنے سے چب خاک پہ آتا ہے سر میرا کلا دیکھے غم اس سے برا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میں بہو میرے سر تیرے دا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میں زینب ہو میرے مادو میں ہے آدا کو قاضی کی بہاہو میں بے دست ہے وہ قاضی پابند رسن ہوں میں یاد آئی وفا اس کی جب پاس رہا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میرے سر تیرے دا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد سجاد تیری حالت دیکھی نہیں جاتی ہے بے پردہ مجھے دیکھے یہ بات رلاتی ہے سجاد تیری طرح کانٹوں پہ چلا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میں زینب ہوں میرے سر تیرے دا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میں زینب ہوں میرے سر تیرے دا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا مجمع ہے کوفیوں کا میرے چلنے کی جا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا سجاد میں زینب ہوں میرے سر تیرے دا کوئی نہیں بازار جفا یا حسین
محمد و آل محمد صلوات توجہ زیارت آفٹر زیارت پلیز بی سیٹڈ تھینک یو Salawat salam alayka ya Rasulullah, salam alayka ya Nabi Allah, salam alayka ya Muhammad ibn Abdullah, السلام عليك يا أمير المؤمنين يا أبو الأئمة السلام عليك يا فاطمة الزهراء سيدتي نساء العالمين السلام عليك يا خديجة الكبرى أم المؤمنين السلام عليك يا إمام الحسن المجتبى السلام عليك يا وارث أعظم صفوة الله السلام عليك يا وارث نوح نبي الله السلام عليك يا وارث إبراهيم خليل الله السلام عليك يا وارث موسى كليم الله السلام عليك يا وارث عيسى روح الله السلام عليك يا وارث محمد حبيب الله السلام عليك يا وارث أمير المؤمنين ولي الله عليه السلام السلام عليك يا ابن محمد المصطفى السلام عليك يا ابن علي المرتضى السلام عليك يا ابن فاطمة الزهراء السلام عليك يا ابن خديجة الكبرى السلام عليك يا ثار الله وابن ثاره والوتر الموتور أشهد أنك قد أقمت الصلاة وآتيت الزكاة وأمرت بالمعروف ونهيت عن المنكر وتعت الله ورسوله حتى أتاك اليقين فلعن الله أمة قتلتك ولعن الله أمة ظلمتك ولعن الله أمة سمعت بذلك فرضيت به يا مولاي يا أبا عبد الله أشهد أنك كنت نورا في الأصلاب الشامخة والأرحام المطهرة لم تنجسك الجاهلية بأنجاسها ولم تلبسك من مدلهمات ثيابها وأشهد أنك من دائم الدين وأركان المؤمنين وأشهد أنك الإمام البر التكي الرزي الزكي الحادي المهدي وأشهد أن الأئمة من ولدك كلمة التقوى وأعلام الهدى والعروة الوثقى والحجة على أهل الدنيا وأشهد الله وملائكته وأنبياءه ورسوله أني بكم مؤمن وبيا بكم موقن بشرع ديني وخواتيم عملي وقلبي لقلبكم سلم وأمري لأمركم متبع صلوات الله عليكم وعلى أرواحكم وعلى أجسادكم وعلى أجسامكم وعلى شاهدكم وعلى غائبكم وعلى ظاهركم وعلى باطنكم زيارة علي بن الحسين عليه السلام السلام عليك يا ابن رسول الله السلام عليك يا ابن نبي الله السلام عليك يا ابن أمير المؤمنين السلام عليك يا ابن الحسين الشهيد السلام عليك أيها الشهيد السلام عليك أيها المظلوم وابن المظلوم لعن الله أمة قتلتك ولعن الله أمة ظلمتك ولعن الله أمة سمعت بذلك فرضيت به زيارة جميع الشهداء السلام عليكم يا أولياء الله وأحباءه السلام عليكم يا أصفياء الله وبداءه السلام عليكم يا أنصار دين الله السلام عليكم يا أنصار رسول الله السلام عليكم يا أنصار أمير المؤمنين السلام عليكم يا أنصار فاطمة سيدتي نساء العالمين السلام عليكم يا أنصار أبي محمد الحسن بن علي الولي الزكي الناصح السلام عليكم يا أنصار أبو عبد الله بأبي أنتم وأمي تبتم وتابت الأرض التي فيها دفنتم وفزتم فوزا عظيما فيا ليتني كنت معكم فأفوز معكم زيارة أبو الفضل العباس بن أمير المؤمنين السلام عليك يا أبو الفضل العباس بن أمير المؤمنين السلام عليك يا ابن السيد الوسيين السلام عليك يا ابن أول القوم إسلاما وأقدمهم إيمانا وأقومهم بدين الله وأحوتهم على الإسلام أشهد لك لقد نصحت لله ولرسوله ولأخيك فنعم الأخ المواسي فلعن الله أمة قتلتك، ولعن الله أمة ظلمتك، ولعن الله أمة استحلت منك المحارم وانتهك الحرمة الإسلام. فنعم الصابر المجاهد المحامي الناصر، ولأخي الدافع عن الأخي المجيب إلى طاعته ربه راغب فيما زهد فيه غيره من الثواب الجزيل والثناء الجميل، ولحقك الله بدرجة آبائك في جنات النعيم. اللهم إني تعرست لزيارة أوليائك رغبة في ثوابك ورجاء لمغفرتك وجزيل أحسانك، فأسألك أن تصلي على محمد وآله الطاهرين، وأن تجعل رزقي بهم دارا، وعيشي بهم قارا، وزيارتي بهم المقبولة، وحياتي بهم طيبة، وأدرجني أدراج المكرمين، واجعلني ممن ينقلب من زيارة مشاهد أحبائك مفلحا منجحا، قد استوجبوا غفران الذنوب وستر العيوب وكشف الكروب، إنك أهل التقوى وأهل المغفرة. السلام عليك جميع الشهداء كربلاء، خصوصا سيدي ومولاي أقاب الفضل العباس ابن أمير المؤمنين، وأختك زينب وبنتك سكينة وابنائك الأليين الشهيدين. السلام عليك يا ساداتي وموالي جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. السلام عليك يا إمام المسلمين علي بن الحسين ومحمد بن علي وجعفر بن محمد وموسى بن جعفر وعلي بن موسى ومحمد بن علي وعلي بن محمد والحسن بن علي، صلوات السلام عليك يا حجة الله في أرضه. السلام عليك يا صاحب العصر والزمان. السلام عليك يا شيخ القرآن. السلام عليك يا إمام إنس والجان. ألمان 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 من فتنة الزمان، عجل الله تعالى فرجك وسهل الله تعالى مخرجك وظهورك، ورحمة الله وبركاته.